because we are living in a chemical world, and I'm a chemical nondescript person. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl or boy. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical.
Hi, I'm Kenna Crampton, Membership Director at KD&K Carbondale Community Access Radio.
And I'm Maggie Saldine, a peer recovery coach for Mind Springs Health and West Springs Hospital. And welcome to Chemical World, a podcast about recovery where we promote safe and healthy communities through conversations about evidence-based practices and alternative recovery models.
And through stories of personal recovery.
As well as scientific data.
We hope to expand conversations about addiction and reduce the stigma associated with illicit drug use.
In my new role as peer recovery coach with Mind Springs, my primary focus is on opioids as I'm working under the state opiate response grant. But of course, throughout this podcast, we plan to address all of the addictions that exist and all of the recovery models out there. But just as kind of a brief introduction, if you are unfamiliar, the opioid crisis has been raging in the United States since the advent of OxyContin in 1996 and its associated false advertising and overprescription. Now we're facing an overdose crisis as methamphetamines have become increasingly popular. Rural communities are not immune to the consequences of this epidemic, as residents often have access to drugs without access to appropriate services. Additionally, alcohol is the easiest drug to access and also the most lethal, doing more damage to the organs of the body than heroin and claiming an average of 88,000 American lives annually, making it the third leading preventable cause of death behind poor diet and physical activity, which is number two, and tobacco-related deaths, which is number one. So obviously, there's a lot more than opioids that are claiming American lives. And the physical science of addiction has developed a lot in recent years. Our technological advances in medicine have allowed us to understand the biologic nature of addiction more clearly, but most of us are still pretty familiar with propaganda about drugs that we've seen in the media.
Wow, that's a lot. That's why we're doing this, because there is so much to talk about and so much to learn about. And there's a lot of that is because of the stigma around addiction in general. Definitely there's more stigma against people who are addicted to heroin and opioids for some reason, because it's so easy to become addicted to it. It seems like there should be less stigma almost because it's so addictive.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because some of the science coming out is kind of questioning that. Like, we always thought like crack cocaine was more addictive, right? But there's a lot coming out that it's really more about the person and about the situation than it is about the drug. And so it's interesting because I myself have a lot of personal experience in addiction and in substance abuse. And, you know, I feel like I've seen it all. And when I was reading this book, High Price by Dr. Carl Hart, I love it and would recommend it to everyone. He's a neuroscientist from Columbia University. So he really focused on crack, right? And that book really made me question my own experiences compared to what I think about when I think about drug users. Because when I think about a meth user, I think about that person who can't hold a job, you know, lives on the streets, their face is covered in sores. But in reality, that has not been my experience with meth addicts. And so it's like, where did I get this idea, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of goal of this show is for us to be able to bring you a lot of the data in an understandable way. And so I have a lot of knowledge about this stuff. And Kenna and I both have a lot of personal experience growing up in the Roaring Fork Valley. And we're both in our own personal recovery stories right now. And so I really like that we have, Kenna is here to ask me questions so that I don't get off base. Do you want to talk about your personal recovery story today?
For me, what I have the most experience in is addiction with alcohol. My father died 18 years ago now from cirrhosis of the liver. And so it has pretty much always been an issue in my life since I was a child. And so I have, in the last couple of years, been really working on what my relationship to alcohol looks like. And so that's my biggest issue. And what I'm in recovery from is alcohol. And I'm a little bit more loose when it comes to other drugs, but I don't take any hard chemical drugs, which I think is one reason why we went with Chemical World, because in our experiences, chemical drugs like cocaine, heroin, alcohol, those are what are the issues in terms of the crisis.
Absolutely. And it's so funny when you think about it, because again, like, it just comes back to, for me, terminology. And it's so, I think it just almost can get us off base sometimes, because I watched this great show/podcast called Midnight Gospel recently. And I'm going to steal some of the stuff that they said, because they had Dr. Drew on, and he was, you know, they're all chemicals, is my point. You know, marijuana is a chemical, and heroin is a plant that grows in the ground. I think, to me, the only, like, really, really, like, synthetic drug in my mind is, like, MDMA, right? Or, like,
2CB or...
Yeah, or, like, even prescription drugs. But it's interesting to think about, because, so, like, obviously here in Colorado, we have a very different relationship with marijuana. And that's something that I think we really want to address in our concept of recovery is, yeah, we know so many people who are in recovery, who have struggled with substance abuse. And for a lot of people, marijuana doesn't really, that's not their problem. That's not the problem they're addressing. They've been sober for 20 years off of alcohol and they still smoke marijuana, you know. And so that's really where I feel there's a need to talk about alternative recovery models, because in abstinence recovery models, they would not be super stoked about that, right? So I want to make it, you know, I want recovery to be approachable for everyone. And recovery does not necessarily mean being 100% sober. And there are lots of options to be safer and healthier, even if you don't want to be 100% sober. But going back to the chemical piece, it's just really interesting to me, because we always say, like, marijuana, it's not a drug, it's a plant and it grows from the ground, right? Well, so is cocaine. Yeah, so is heroin. So, you know, so is LSD, is derived from a naturally occurring substance. And so what really grinds my gears, and I'm sure a lot of people out there, is, you know, our national drug scheduling system. And that was enacted by Richard Nixon in the 1960s. And basically, the scheduling system right now makes it so we have five schedules. Schedule one means that there's no medical use for it. It's unsafe. It's dangerous. It'll kill you. There's no medical use for it, right?
Alcohol? No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, of course not, right? It's not scheduled. It's not, alcohol isn't scheduled at all. Neither is tobacco, right? It's crazy. No, alcohol doesn't even count in that. But you know what is in Schedule 1? LSD, marijuana. You know, GHB has more clinical value, according to that scheduling system, than marijuana does. And of course, there's action happening to address this, because, yeah, that's crazy. In the 21st century, it's craziness. That's how our scheduling system would be.
I just love what you said about the different, that you want recovery to be approachable. And I think that that's one of the main reasons why we wanted to put this podcast together. One is to educate the community and to destigmatize drug addiction. Another part of it is to show that recovery can be approachable. To me, when I was first thinking about quitting drinking, it felt like if I quit drinking, then I have to quit doing everything, which for me wasn't really too big of a deal, because most the two drugs that I used most were alcohol and pot. And then cocaine was a problem at one point in my life, but that's not something that I really, like, if I'm not drinking, I'm not going out and trying to find cocaine. So right. It's not really an issue. But it was really scary. The idea of, like, I can't do anything anymore for the rest of my life was so scary. And I really had to think about what was right for me and what did I need to do to be happy and to feel adjusted, like a normal human being. because alcohol wasn't working for me with that. But so I loved that you said, you know, make a recovery approachable. So.
Yeah, well, recovery is so intimidating, right? And I really appreciate what you said, because for me, it was really hard thinking about, like, well, what am I going to do at this event in 6 months, you know? Or, like, what am I going to do at Christmas? Or, yeah, like, how am I going to live in society without drinking? But for me, it's like, you know, that's you just got to take it one step at a time, you know? Every day is a miracle. But
that's one of my favorite things that I have taken from AA is – take it one day at a time. I mean, and there's been so many times where I'm like, I'm just taking it 1 hour at a time because I literally am having, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to that during COVID, especially. Mm-hmm. But when I lost a friend a couple years ago, it was like, I just need to take it 15 minutes at a time. I just need to get through these 15 minutes and then the next 15 minutes and then we'll see where I'm at.
Absolutely.
So.
No, you have to start from the ground up. And yeah, I agree. Even an hour at a time, it can feel like too much, and like minutes, at like 1 minute at a time. Like, okay, I made it through that minute. Let's get on to the next minute. Because it does get easier. And you do go to those family gatherings and stay sober and it's fine. You
and
know,
it's actually like, more fun than it was, because you're not like, did I really say that to my grandma?
Exactly. I was so excited to spend time with my family sober, because I was like, I'm not going to feel that nagging embarrassment, you know? But so I think you brought up a really good point, too, that, yeah, there's, you know, obviously so much stigma about drug use and mental illness, but there's a lot of stigma about getting help, and there's a lot of stigma about recovery, and there's a lot of stigma particularly about AA and abstinence models. And I just, like, you know, take what you want and leave the rest. Like, that's a mantra of AA's that I took because I love it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're all about, you know, whatever gets you happy. I mean, and of course, their model has changed throughout the years. I mean, if you read the big book, it is very sexist and very pointed at males. And the person who started AA, Dr. Bill, did not believe that women could be addicted to alcohol. And obviously we've come so far from that. And I've even been to a couple AA women's groups that honestly I enjoyed so much, because we all are going through the same thing, and especially alcohol. It's a really, that's when I was originally first starting to try and get sober, there was a lot of stigma around a lot of my friends.
Yeah, it's like you're really swallowing a lot of pride by making that decision. And I just want to say, you know, for people, because I was that way. I was really turned off from AA specifically for a very long time. But, you know, even here in the Valley, there's a lot of options. Like you said, I mean, I kind of like to, like, go to different meetings because mm-hmm. you get different things from different ones, you know. And I just feel like, you know, it's not – my experiences with AA here in the Valley is that for the most part, all the groups are very welcoming. I never felt like I was in the wrong place. I always felt like I was in the right place. And yeah. I learned a lot about myself, and I, you know, it was a great opportunity. So I don't like to be hyperbolic, because I feel like everyone's story is completely different. But I will say that, like, if you are an addict of any kind, whether it's alcohol or not, you will probably feel at home in those groups.
And they, not only do they make you feel at home, but you'll find a person or mm-hmm. two that you can really connect to. And I think that is why AA is so successful, is the community aspect of it.
We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical.
In my new position with MindSprings, my primary role is connecting opioid users to treatment. And so our focus is on getting people into Suboxone programs, which is a medication-assisted treatment program, which we'll discuss more throughout this podcast series. However, basically, I'm here to connect substance users with whatever they need. And so whether that is a inpatient recovery program that follows the 12 steps and is 100% abstinence, or connecting you with a Suboxone provider or a methadone clinic, or if you're not an opioid user, finding you something that works for you, or if you are using and do not wish to stop, especially if you are an injection drug user, I can connect you with safe, sterile equipment and services that will help you at least use safely until you're ready to go into treatment. And that sounds really, really scary to people, but when opioid users are approached with that mentality that we will help you whether you are using or not, the evidence is that they get into programs more often and they stay sober longer. There's less recidivism with this approach to being open-minded towards substance use and just trying to reduce the actual physical harm than there is with any of the punitive methods, any of the, you know, strategies of the war on drugs. Those have all been complete failures. Imprisoning people does not help because substance abuse is a mental health issue and not a criminal issue. And that is the change that I am trying to make here in the Roaring Fork Valley through my work with opioid users.
Wow, that was so well said. Thank you. That is one reason why we have discussed decriminalizing drugs, because treating addicts like they're criminals isn't working and does not help. And like you said, if you are approaching addicts like, we're going to help you whether you keep using or not, that's taking the stigma away and making someone feel like, oh, I'm just a person with a problem that maybe this isn't how I want to live my life. And it's not so much like you're doing something wrong. It gives them a second to say, maybe this isn't what I want. So it's so great. And I just love how you said that. It's the opioid crisis, drug crisis is a mental health issue, not a criminal issue. I just want to say that again because I just think it's so.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you just said, too, about like the opioid crisis / overdose crisis, because the numbers from 2018, which is our most recent data, show that there were more methamphetamine overdoses in Colorado than heroin or opiate, meaning fentanyl or prescription medications or whatever. So this is like a dual crisis now. This is an overdose crisis. People are dying, and it's not just from opioids.
And I think we both know, growing up in the Roaring Fork Valley, coke is a little bit more of an issue than heroin. It's just easier to find. It's so easy to find.
Right, and
cocaine.
I think that it's just more often that people party with cocaine. Like, they party recreationally with cocaine more often than they party recreationally with heroin. So when you see heroin use, it's more often like a chronic problem. Whereas with cocaine, you may not realize that it's a chronic problem. And I'll just say too that like it's so hard to say like which illegal activity is happening more than the other, because it's hard for us to know exactly what the numbers are when it comes to illegal activity, because at the end of the day, we can't really get accurate numbers, you know.
And that was more of like, from my experience, I was never able to find, like, I wasn't out looking for heroin where I was looking for cocaine, so maybe that's why it was easier.
But it's like the cocaine is like right there in your face, whereas the heroin, you kind of like might have to seek it out a little bit more. I definitely agree with that. And again, like, these things are here in the valley. We all know they are. I really appreciated you sharing your personal story about your dad. And so, of course, I do have to say, because it's so important to the work I do, that my mother died of a heroin overdose here in Carbondale when I was 15. And at that time, everyone I knew in my life was using heroin, whether they were 15 years old or my parents' age, you know. And so, and this is a continuing problem. It didn't, like, go away when she died, you know. And then, of course, like anyone who works in the restaurant industry probably knows that cocaine is easy to get. And I think that that's kind of part, like the tourism kind of party scene of Aspen, like it kind of perpetuates that a little bit more, I think, you know. And then, we definitely, obviously, Down Valley, methamphetamines are an even bigger issue. There's even benzodiazepine prescription drug abuse, you know. There's all sorts of drug abuse happening here in the valley. We are definitely not immune to it.
No, and I've also heard, you know, kids say like, oh, well, there's not a lot to do around here, so we do drugs because we're not in a city, you know. And of course, outdoors people would argue that very much, because we live in such an amazingly beautiful place. But when you're a kid, going on a hike does not sound like fun.
Yeah.
Going and getting drunk with your friends, that sounds like fun. And So,
and I think that you just hit like something really important that I've been thinking about recently, and that's how we tend to let disadvantaged youth in the valley fall between the cracks. Like, I saw that thing in the Sopra Sun the other day about the $500 reward, and like obviously there's been more property destruction happening since then, and like in my mind I just see it as being a group of kids, but there was that reward, and at the bottom it said this shouldn't happen anywhere, but especially in Carbondale. And I really like, it just reminded me of being 15, 14, 13 in the valley. I wasn't interested in doing things outside, you know? And it's like, we're not, you know, you might think that everyone in the valley is rich and has all these opportunities and all after school programs because Carbondale has all these great services. But there are people out there slipping between the cracks, and they're slipping further and further the more we act like they're not there, mm-hmm. the more we act like this isn't happening in the valley, that there aren't kids in need, that there aren't poor families here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And the, obviously, like, our undocumented population, like, that's something we really need to address, helping those guys. And just in general, like, I grew up in the valley, a child of addiction. I grew up in a terrible home. But people think that I come from this great background because I'm from Carbondale. Well, I didn't. So, you know, we need to address that these people are in our community, and they don't have, they might not have supportive families, they might not have supportive networks, and they don't have a lot to do except for, and again, this is total postulation, but tip over all the flower pots in town, you know? Like, I'm sorry, I do not condone that, but that absolutely sounds like something I would have done at 13. And it's that anger at a system that did not acknowledge my existence.
Yeah, wow, yeah, that's totally true. And you know, there are still poor people here. They're the ones servicing everybody. And they have children as well who are being ignored. And we want to reach them.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, I'm not trying to criticize anyone. I just wanted to be out there on the radar because I just think that, and just from my experiences, that we have a tendency to think that that stuff doesn't go on here. But it does.
It does. And I also want to, we mentioned AA. There's another program here in the Valley that I've heard such great feedback about is the mindfulness in recovery. And that's something, I haven't actually attended any of the meetings, but I know from my personal experience, yoga and meditation has been so helpful in my recovery. And again, exercise, living in this wonderfully beautiful place, being able to get out and get exercise has changed my whole recovery experience. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, mindfulness is a huge part about it. And I did just want to say, too, about AA, I'm glad you kind of brought us back there because, you know, I just come from a place of, like, I had a really bad impression of AA growing up. And, you know, I just want to say, too, that, like, the groups here in the Valley are not like that. I mean, I specifically, the Brown Bagger noon meeting in Glenwood, like, if you're worried about, you know, being judged, if you're worried that AA is going to tell you who you have to be, that group was so welcoming. You know, being from the Valley, it's just like it just felt good. It is a co-ed group. But it really doesn't, it just really, I think, counteracts a lot of those stigmas I had associated with AA. And also, AA does kind of, like, you know, we think about AA, like, you have to be 100% sober, you have to be 100% abstinence. Well, like, everyone starts from scratch, right? Everyone in recovery starts by being an addict or having substance abuse issues. And so they actually don't, I mean, it's not like you can't come if you're not completely sober. They have different groups, and, you know, some groups are closed or open or whatever. But even if you are seeking recovery and you're not sober yet, I mean, I know of people who have gone into meetings drunk and they just ask you to not talk. You know, it's not,
yeah,
you are not restricted.
Yeah, but they want you there because they want to help you. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's such a great point to bring up, that it's for everybody. And I also just want to real quick point out that with in this COVID time that we're living in, that we find ourselves in, Zoom meetings are how AA has been being held. And my therapist mentioned how great it is because now if you're here in the Valley, you could attend a meeting in New York through Zoom, and that's as anonymous as it can get. So that's another, if you're really nervous about someone in the Valley recognizing you or whatever, check out a meeting in another state on Zoom. I mean, That's a possibility now that we have in this weird COVID world, a great opportunity that has come from this weirdness.
Yeah. And you brought up another good point about anonymity in the Valley. Like, that was something that also always kept me out of AA or even Al-Anon meetings, mm-hmm. which is Al-Anon is AA for family members, basically. So, like, if you are just interested in addiction or you have a family member in addiction, Al-Anon is great for that. For me, I always felt uncomfortable because I'm like, well, I'm an addict too.
But a lot of people, and I know this is also information from my therapist, but I do know that, and just from knowing, but a lot of people attend AA and Al-Anon because a lot of people who are addicts, their families are addicts as well, and they're trying to deal with that. And that's that can be a really hard part of your own recovery, is trying to deal with another family mm-hmm. member who hasn't quite been seeking out recovery. And that was a point that I found myself in a couple times. And I'm lucky enough now to have most of the people in my life that matter the most that did have problems are now also in recovery in their own ways. And, you know, it's been a real help for us. But
yeah, that's a great example of utilizing both of those.
And they also have adult children of alcoholics. Mm-hmm. There's meetings like that. You know, if you're not an alcoholic yourself, but are still an adult child of an alcoholic and still trying to deal with it, because it lasts forever, those problems. But
yeah, but I just wanted to say about the anonymity piece. I was always afraid to go to meetings in the Valley because I'm like, I'm going to know everyone there. But that's why I actually ended up loving those meetings, is because I felt an accountability that was beyond myself, whether that's like healthy or not. Like, I felt accountability because I knew these people and I loved them. Mm-hmm. I do love them, you know? Uh-huh. And so it was like, I wasn't just getting sober for me. I mean, ultimately everyone who gets sober does it for them, but it's like also so that we can do better things for our communities and for our friends and families. And, you know, the other thing too about, yeah, like, it's very common to have other addicted people in your family. And it's like the biological underpinnings of addiction are really interesting, because not only is there like a biological part to it, but I've always believed that like you're raised into a culture of addiction. I read in a substance mm-hmm. abuse textbook that Jewish people by and large have less alcoholism in their family. And I think that that's just because of how we frame alcohol use. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a holiday where the goal is to get as drunk as you can. So I just don't think as a Jewish community, we think about alcoholism as a problem, mm-hmm. you know, or like, it's just, it doesn't manifest itself in the same way. I used to think like maybe, oh, it's because we like have healthier drinking patterns for some reason. But really, I think it's, and then I said that to somebody and he said to me like, oh yeah, I was raised Catholic. There's no such thing as alcoholism. You either drink or you're a woman, like, you know? And so it really is like, not only is there a biological, you know, precursor to developing addictive behaviors, but like when, you know, for me, like being raised by an alcoholic, like that was all I knew. Mm-hmm. I started drinking at 12. And so
that's what everybody did.
Yeah. And exactly. And just, you know, getting back and also because I just didn't really see any other future for myself. And getting back to the piece about like, I didn't know, like, how am I going to go to someone's birthday party and not drink? Because I had never lived a life where I wasn't drinking.
Or where people around mm-hmm. you went to birthday parties and they didn't drink. Like, that's like, yeah, exactly. I love that you said that. I did really quick. We are getting close to our time being over, but I wanted to go over some of the topics that you felt were the most important that you really wanted to get out to the community.
Absolutely, Kenna. And thank you so much. And yeah, I really want to be able to get the science out there, but I also want it to be a comfortable personal conversation. So every week I'm going to kind of bring a topic to discuss, and then I'm going to talk about it, and Kenna's going to ask me what I'm talking about. So, and you know, of course, my passion is opioids and harm reduction for injection drug users. So some of the stuff is about that a little more specifically, but I want it to be really broad. So some of the subjects that we hope to address through this podcast will be fentanyl, medication-assisted treatment, Narcan and or naloxone, the science of addiction, the history of addiction and drug laws in the United States, and just the laws that exist now, changes in laws, and, you know, some of the things that are going on nationally and locally in an attempt to decriminalize substances and put an end to the overdose crisis.
Wow. Yeah, those are some great subjects. We will definitely get a little bit more into some of this, but just real quick, what exactly is fentanyl?
Yeah, so fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that is like 100 times stronger than morphine. So it's much stronger than other opioids. And so it very commonly causes overdoses. I don't even like to call them overdoses. I like to call them hot shots because it's not really the amount. It's just the drug. And so fentanyl is something that's really continuing to contribute to that increase in overdose deaths.
And like you said, they're not technically overdoses. It's pretty much just because they are shooting up fentanyl rather than heroin, right?
Yeah.
Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically it is an overdose because it's just that the fentanyl itself is so strong. But like a really common concern in the opioid using community is that you might not know if there's fentanyl in your heroin. Mm-hmm. And that's a big concern is drug purity.
Okay, and then what's a MAT recovery model?
Yeah, so MAT is medication-assisted treatment. The most common medication that they use in the Valley is Suboxone. And basically, it's a combination opioid blocker / opioid antagonist is what Suboxone specifically is. But so MAT programs work with a combination of an opioid management drug like Suboxone and counseling to help people get clean off of opioids. And it's usually a long-term program. Suboxone can be designed for long-term use. And basically, it's a method of people who can get off heroin, but they're technically still taking an opiate, but they're not getting high. So they're able to manage their cravings, manage their withdrawal symptoms, not use heroin, not use needles. They're just taking this pill and going to their counseling, and they can live regular lives. But technically, they are still taking an opiate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's Narcan?
Narcan is a drug that reverses overdoses. So it basically, the chemical itself, and the chemical is in Suboxone. Suboxone is a combination of two medications. And so, but this is why Suboxone works the way it does. The chemical itself binds to opioid receptors and kicks out whatever else is in there. So if you're overdosing from fentanyl or heroin or a prescription opiate and you take Narcan, ideally it kicks out that drug and gets it out of your system. So there's a lot more there, but basically it reverses overdoses.
And so that's like the drug that he had in Pulp Fiction when
yes.
Uma Thurman was overdosing and that he stabbed into her chest. That was a form of Narcan,
yeah,
maybe?
So first of all, I would never stab it into someone's chest. But
that is a very good thing to say. You might want to say that again because if anyone has ever seen
Pulp Fiction,
that's what you're going to assume you want to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, do not put it in their chest. So to recap, Narcan is, yes, like the drug that he uses in Pulp Fiction to revive Uma Thurman. However, the needle form is usually called naloxone. It's pretty much the same drug. It's just kind of about like how it's administered and the cost of getting it. If you have a naloxone injector, do not put it into someone's heart. It goes in their thigh, their butt, or maybe their arm. You want it to go into like a muscle. It's not, I think there's this common misconception that you're like sending an adrenaline shot straight to somebody's heart, right? That's not what's going on. You're injecting an opioid antagonist into their muscle. If you're familiar with Depo-Provera, which is the birth control shot, basically any intramuscular shot like Depo or like a flu vaccine, you want it in the muscular areas where it's going to be the best absorbed. And so we usually put it in the butt, the thigh, or the shoulder, never in your chest.
So Narcan can also be administered through the nose or nostrils as well, right?
Correct. So that's basically the main difference between naloxone and Narcan is that naloxone is I think it's a lower dosage and it's in a needle. And the Narcan is a 4-milligram nasal spray that comes in a 2-pack. It is covered by Medicaid and you can get it at any pharmacy. It's $130 before insurance. So as far as like being, an emergency medication that's available immediately, the pharmacy may not always be your safest bet if you don't for sure know like what your insurance situation is, or if you know they might not have it and you might have to wait a couple of days. But normally it is, like, you can walk in and get a prescription for it at any pharmacy. I know for a fact that Carbondale City Market has it. I know for a fact that the Walgreens in Glenwood has it. Walmart in Glenwood has it, although they might not know what you're talking about. You might have to be really specific. So if you're uncomfortable divulging personal information about what's going on, maybe go to City Market. But also, if you are interested in Narcan, Jared Rollins at Mid Valley Family Practice has Narcan available to the public for free. And I also have Narcan available to the public for free. And we'll be doing Narcan trainings throughout the communities in the near future. So, yeah, thanks for those great questions. And I just, you know, all of these topics I can talk on for 25 minutes. And so that's why I'd like to give them some focus. But so every episode we'll be talking about a different subject. We'd like to get maybe some community providers and also community recovery people to come in and share their stories. So we just want to kind of give ourselves a little bit of an outline so that we can have these really personal conversations about it.
I love it. And I am so excited for our future with this and the future of the community and hopefully helping more people in recovery. As we know, there's Jay Walker and there's tons of AA meetings and NA meetings around. So, and mindfulness and recovery. It is something that our community is definitely embracing, and we just want to continue making people feel comfortable talking about recovery and what that looks like and all of the different things.
Yeah, and so I think that with everything going on right now, that next week it might be the perfect time to kind of address just the history of our drug laws, because they are extremely racist. And that is really their only purpose is to oppress. It's not to help people. And it's, yes, of course, people of color, but it's also, people of alternative sexual orientations, people of alternative religions, women, people who are in poverty, I think at the end of the day are the people who are affected. And the problem is that the majority of the impoverished in our country are people of color. For that reason, I think it would be very poignant for us to discuss on our next episode the history of drug laws in America and their racist nature.
We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical.
So every week I'd like to provide us with a little fun fact of the day. So today's fun fact is that in Colorado, there's a needle stick prevention law signed into law on April 3rd, 2015. This law allows for an exception to arrest and filing charges for the crime of possession of drug paraphernalia if the person, prior to being searched by a law enforcement officer, informs the officer that they have a needle, syringe, or other sharp object on their person or in their vehicle or home that is subject to search. So in short, if you tell the cops that you have a needle on you or in your car or home before they search you, they can't charge you for possession or paraphernalia based on that needle.
Awesome. Thank you for the information, and thank you for all of the information today, Maggie. We will be back for another public affairs show on July 13th. And if people want to get a hold of you, Maggie, how can they reach you?
Yeah, so if anyone has any questions about opioids and recovery, you can reach me at 970-531-5060 or at my email at mseldine@mindspringshealth.org.
Great. And just to clarify that for everybody, that is MSELDEEN at mindspringshealth.org.
Thank you guys so much for listening to Chemical World, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Drugs may come and drugs may go, and that's all right, you see. Experience has made me rich, and now I can use safely. It might be beer, it might be dope, it may even be caffeine. But we all have a little something that keeps keeps us on our feet. What's important is being safe and stopping the spread of disease. You do not have to be sober to keep your community clean. 'Cause we are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl or boy. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical gender nondescript.